Hello, it's Kirsty here, and welcome to Season 3, Episode 2 of the Two Fat Expats. Why fat? Well, this is a podcast about living a fat expat life. And I don't mean podgy or loaded with lard. I mean, fill up your expat life to the brim. Make the most of it. Don't miss out on a thing. Today I come to you from the airport bar in Abu Dhabi, hence the piano music and the sound of crushed ice in the background. It's not an average expat day for me. I've had to do a passport run to the embassy so that I can get my daughter a new passport before she has to go to camp. Yes, camp requires a passport. This has been one of the interesting things about being in Qatar. School camp and inter-school sports venture a little wider than our past locations. And that's exactly what we're going to talk about today. Why and how one expat life can look so different to another. Often expats are all lumped in under the same umbrella, when our lives actually look very, very different from location to location. But let's get on with it, shall we? Today we're going to have a chat to two expat women whose lives have changed dramatically between one expat move and another. But first, it's time to introduce you to my fabulous co-host and partner in podcasting, serial expat Nikki Moffat. Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Kirsty Rice. How are you today?
I'm good, but I want to know, how is your expat life different now? So what did it look like before and what does it look like now? Tell me about Hamburg, which I always am busting to say hamburger, which you must get all the time.
Oh, no, no one's. You're the first person that's ever said that. I am a hamburger, no. Yes. Okay. So I'm new. Bear in mind, I'm new and this is all new to me. And so I can only tell you what it looks like right now. And it's quite different from where we last came. We were in suburban America and I was a bad mom. I was living in my activewear and driving my big American SUV. And driving my big SUV around town, and because we had no public transport. So now where we live in the city. We live in an apartment, not a gigantic house with six bathrooms. And we use public transport to get everywhere. We don't have a car right now. We've ordered one, but apparently they're gold-plating it before they deliver it because it's going to take another 3 months.
Good Lord.
We're using the very efficient German public transport system.
Yes, yes. And I am guessing that your children have not used the public transport system in America and got very used to being driven around in your big American car when you were in Atlanta.
That is correct. That is correct. Everywhere you go, you just go to the car and wait for mum and she just gets in and drives you somewhere. So here, and that's the kind of thing. So they do have a bus, a school bus that goes door to door. So they get to go to door to door. When I have to go to visit the school, I have to walk. I have to take a train and a bus and then walk a kilometer at the end.
Do any parents get on the bus with their kids in the morning for, like, if they've ever got to do stuff at school, or is it a real singular thing?
I think probably you're not allowed. That's probably a rule. But when I suggested to my kids that I wanted to do that, they said no.
Would you say then that your kids now have a lot more freedom?
Yeah, I'd say that's another big change for us. In terms of, I mean, they don't necessarily have so much more freedom because of their age and because of they don't have so many friends yet. But in general, kids here are a lot. There's a lot less helicopter parenting going on. I mean, you walk around the streets in the morning, there are little kids like 6 and 7 and 8, like just walking in groups and riding bikes together, and they're riding to and from school. There are lots of kids that come and go by themselves. I've got friends who've moved here from the US and they were not super keen. The girls are 14 and 15 and they weren't keen on coming. And then 6 weeks in, they couldn't love it more because, you know, every weekend they can just walk out and say bye and leave their parents and catch the train and the bus and hang out with their friends. And it's really, you see a lot more kids walking around and doing that, and there's no one calling social services. So it's kind of, I like it. It's good.
And And do you see a lot of dads on bikes and mums on bikes? Like, are the guys in suits on their way to work, and are there skirts on bikes? Like, or does it affect the way that people dress, or how does that work?
I don't think so. I mean, Hamburg is very flat, and there are a lot of bikes. There are many, many rules you have to follow to have a bike and ride around town. And we've all got bikes, but when they're not all legal, but we just ride them anyway because we're super rebellious. But it doesn't seem to affect. I mean, women wear their work clothes. They wear skirts and dresses, and they just ride their bike, and they probably change their shoes when they get to work. They're either going to be in their basket or their little thing on the back. Or, you know, and women with kids, with smaller kids, ride these enormous bikes with these big wooden baskets on the front, like a wheelbarrow, you know, and the kids sit in there, and the ones that are too small to ride, and the ones that ride in front of them. So you see on weekends, it's quite funny, you see like a mother with all these kids in the front of her bike, and then the dad just riding along his bike. It just looks very strange. But the guys ride to work too, and I mean, they wear suits, and I think it's just what they do.
Yeah.
I don't think it gets that hot, so not that much of an issue. If it was a much hotter place, it might be more of an issue.
Now, here's the thing I don't get is that, okay, everyone's riding a bike and it all seems so healthy, you know, like you're thinking about smaller portions from the supermarket because you're carrying them home and all of that sort of stuff. And then you said there's smoking everywhere. Are there really that many people smoking?
My kids are in shock all the time. There's people smoking everywhere. And it's, you know, like, I guess all the, I can't even remember the last place I lived where I thought there was a lot of people smoking. Probably Hong Kong, but not really so many expats. More local people would smoke there. But here, everyone smokes. You go and sit at a restaurant and there's people sitting at a table beside you with their kids smoking. And you're like, my wow. kids want to go. And my son's very civic minded. He wants to go and explain to them. And so we've had to explain to him about, you know, free choice and the world. And it's your decision. And all, because they've come from a country like in America, hardly anyone smokes. And if they do, you don't see it. It's somewhere else. You know, they go behind a building or out of the way. But there's just so much smoking going on, which is crazy.
You're right, to me, though. I mean, it's amazing. It is all now behind a building and out of the way elsewhere. Like, it doesn't happen even outside a restaurant anymore in Australia. You go around the corner and out of the way.
Yeah, whereas here it's just like you're walking along the street. You know, and the other thing is there's a lot of alcohol around. In America, you can't drink in public places either, really. Even though you can buy a beer at a 7-Eleven, you can't go and get in your car and drink it or walk down the street. Whereas I was out walking last weekend, there's a few ladies pushing their prams, and they all had a little beer with them. Just walking. I was like, look at that. And you know, you go to the supermarket and a couple of guys pull up and just like sort of walk in, grab a couple of beers and sit on the bench out the front of the supermarket and catch up about their day. And you're like, that's just so, at the moment to us, that's a very strange kind of thing because we're not used to that right now.
Now, talking about Germans and beer.
Yes. Oh, no. No.
Where were you on the weekend, Nikki Moffat? What were you doing?
Well, on the weekend, I went to an international school event, the Oktoberfest.
Yes.
And I didn't drink any beer, which was probably a big mistake.
How do you do that? How do you not drink beer at Oktoberfest?
Like, I don't like it. So,
wow.
What can I tell you? So I had the wine.
Now, you have to tell me, because I'll tell you what I've got in my mind, and then you can tell me what it looks like in the real world of Germany and Oktoberfest. So I had never been to an Oktoberfest until I came to Qatar, which is kind of funny when you think about that. That is very funny that it took me moving to the Middle East to then start wearing braids and chugging
dirndls.
Beers. Yes, dirndls. I cannot wait for the dirndls. But we'll get on to that. But so we went to our first Oktoberfest, I guess, probably 4 or 5 years ago. And, for us, and because maybe this looks different in other expat locations, so I'll explain what it looks like for us here. You go to a five-star hotel because, of course, you can't drink anywhere but a five-star hotel in Doha. They just don't have the licenses anywhere. And you go out to a huge, big marquee, not shed, but yeah, marquee tent out the back, and it's massive, and it fits, you know, maybe 500 people in it. Probably a quarter to half of the people are wearing their lederhosen and dirndls. And then within minutes, like, you sort of eat first, and then within minutes of eating, everybody is standing on their bench that they've been sitting on, and we start singing with your beers, and you chorus into everything, ticky-tacky, ticky-tacky, oi, oi, oi. And you start pretending that you know German. I sing lots of German songs, and I know that I'm not actually saying any German words because I'm just going, Heinstrovik, and I don't even know if that's a word or if that's the thing. But it involves a lot of that, and then you just have to be very careful to stay away from anyone with Jägermeisters because sometimes they come into the fold, and then you kind of stagger home. So tell me, what does it look like at the international school in Hamburg when you do Oktoberfest?
Well, I do have to say I did speak to a few people from Germans because there's about 30% Germans at the school. Right. And I did ask them, you know, how does this look? You know, because obviously we're not in Munich. And they said, you know, it's only within the last 10 years that these kind of things have happened outside the South. You know, because the North's very different for Germany.
Wow.
And so, you know, you wouldn't have been able to go into a shop and buy a dirndl, you know, but I went into a shop and there were racks and racks and racks of dirndls, and there was a rush on because obviously it was a big weekend for Oktoberfest parties. And the same kind of thing, we turned up, there were lots of balloons and streamers, and there was a sort of table, you know, the long trestle tables with the bench chairs, and then we all ate something. I think I got a bad piece of meat. That's what I'm going with. And there was all the traditional German food. There was lots of noodles and something. I was like, is that a potato? I was like, no, it's white and it's mushy, but it's not potato. And the pork knuckle. And then we ate, and then immediately, although the DJ was always there, he just kicks in, and there's a lot of American folk songs. There's lots of Sweet Caroline, and there's...
Oh, yes.
That and happened
take, last two.
And some kind of jazz version of Take Me Home, Country Roads.
Yes.
Living the dream in Qatar. That's exactly what happens in Hamburg.
Oh, that's so funny. And we have a live band with
that's very fancy. We didn't have a live band. But what we did have was a lot of people on bikes riding into the darkness.
And did everybody wear a dirndl and lederhosen?
98%.
Wow.
98%. My husband, we were standing on the street in the city waiting for a taxi. And my husband is like, I hope people are dressed up. I was like, people told me we will stand out if we are not dressed up. People are walking past us in the street because we live on sort of a busy street. No one's staring at us. So I'm like, it's okay because no one's looking at us like we're total freaks. So maybe we'll be okay. So we get there and we're sort of looking and looking because we didn't know anyone. So we went later, sort of a bit later. And I'm looking around the corner. He's like, I can't see anyone dressed up. I'm like, oh, my God, every single man is wearing lederhosen. And so he was okay. So it was fine. So we went in. But I can see, you know, he hasn't worn that before. And I've never worn a dirndl. So there you go.
So on Friday, we should let everybody know that it was Friday, wasn't it? You sent me a picture of you in the change rooms in your dirndl. And yours is a hot. I like yours. Yours is very nice. I think it's got to do with you have very good skin. You have very, very nice skin. And
that's very nice.
But it looked good. And, of course, once I saw you in your dirndl, I immediately needed one and had to organise to PayPal you money and for you to send it here. But my favourite comment of our chat, because Greg was, you know, trying to have an afternoon nap while you and I were chatting, and he was most perturbed because I was like, look, Nikki's in the shop now and she says they're really cheap and we've got to get one now. And my favourite moment was when you said, okay, does he want long lederhosen or short lederhosen? And he raised his head from the pillow and said, I think I've got the legs to do short.
Well, I think short is the go because I went and there really weren't many men in the long. So I think he's...
Oh, good.
So yeah. Legs or not, I know he's got his mammal legs going, so he's probably probably shaved as well, are they?
Yes.
So
it'll
be lovely.
Yes, he's a middle-aged man in lycra legs. So, yes, we haven't reached the shaving stage yet. So, yes, back to the point. So... Okay. Yes, so that's what your expat life looks like. And I think that's the thing, is that we're looking at how my expat life and your expat life may be very different, and that it's a bit of a problem when people lump all expats into the same group because we're all living very different expat lives. And I guess how my expat life is very different than yours is obviously the scenery. I'm out in the desert and it's, you know, 48 degrees, and if I was to look out my window now, and maybe we could do that, Nikki, you should take a photo of looking out your window.
I will.
And I'll take a photo of looking out mine, because, well, for a start, there's no front window at the front of our house. There are no windows because I'm in an Arab country where, you know, people don't really like to advertise what's going on in their homes, so it's all top secret. So when you look out the back of my house, there is massive roadworks, which really symbolise Qatar, because we're in such a push at the moment to have this country ready for the World Cup 2022, that everywhere you go is under construction. And so the back of my house represents that very well. So I'll take a photo to show you that we now have basically a road in the back of our house with street lights and the whole lot. And that all happened while we were away over the summer. And so for me too, the difference here as an expat is when we were moving here from the US, someone said to us, look, go to Qatar as long as you are fully aware that you will always be a worker bee. And what they meant by that was you'll always get to a certain level. Like, Qataris will always run the country, and Qatar is very big on what they call Qatarization, and that's making sure that Qataris have jobs, you know, senior positions.
Yeah. Yes, okay, I get it. I love Qatarization as a word. I think it's an awesome word.
I know. And I guess, Tim, most people drive, which is great. I've lived in countries where I haven't. Whereas here it is absolutely knock your socks off scary the first time you attempt to do it. And most people wait for a very quiet Friday morning, because that's our weekend, before they even attempt to have a go at it. But, it, you know, it's one of those things. It looks completely scary and you say you'll never do it, and then lo and behold, 4 weeks later you're driving and you can't remember ever not being like that.
And I think that's true of anywhere. I mean, I remember going to Hong Kong and looking around and thinking, I'm never going to drive here. And 6 months later, you know, there I am, 2 inches from the car. You know, there's no rules in Hong Kong about merging, except if you're 2 inches in front of the car beside you, you're in. So, but then it's their job to make them, you think that they're actually 2 inches ahead. So it's like life and death for the merge situation.
Yes, yeah. And that's it in Qatar. We have these roundabouts that have no rules at all, and it's just get on there. And, you know that whole thing about once you're on the roundabout, you have the right of way, that doesn't exist here. It's just get ready because people are going to come at you from all angles. So I think...
And you have... Yeah, and you have a lot of different interesting things to watch while you're on the road too, right?
Yes.
In the back of trucks and things like that.
Yes, we get to look at camels and goats and, you know, yeah, like you'll pull up behind a very what you thought was really a ridiculously small Isuzu, whatever they are, you know, pickup, and it'll have two camels sitting there looking straight through your front window.
But in South Africa, there used to be like hundreds of workers in the back of trucks, you know, like holding things down. No need for ropes, just put two guys in the back to hold that down. You know, and you would go past and there'd be like 20 guys in the back of a truck and they'd be singing songs and it'd be super cool. But, you know, the rest of the time you're probably worrying for their safety.
Yeah.
And it unfortunately has a very high accident rate and very high road death toll in South Africa.
Qatar had a much higher road death toll, and as the city moves along and progresses and the roads get better, and and now we have, you know, all sorts of fines and lights and whatever, that is reducing. But there is, still is an element of young boys driving fast cars and just complete craziness. Okay, I guess the other thing that's different here is, you know, the dress to adhere to. You've got your shoulders covered and, you know, most of the time, although I do notice not everybody is adhering to that as much as they used to, which I guess is what probably happened in Dubai. You know how Dubai is much freer and easier?
No, I haven't been there. I mean, I'm aware of it, but I don't know the differences specifically.
Yeah. Well, if you live in Qatar and you head over to Dubai, you're quite shocked by, wow, there's people in shorts and, you know, oh, look over there, that person's got a shoestring strap top on. You know, that would never happen in Qatar. But I guess what happens is the population just increases with more and more foreigners, and it gets harder and harder to police, I guess. I'm gathering that's what's happening because
it's not that the locals don't change the way they dress at all.
No, the locals don't change, and I can't imagine their attitudes change, but maybe that it just becomes harder and harder to police. I don't know.
So the other thing we have here is a language issue because, you know, everyone speaks German and we don't yet, and we will, and, you know, we will be learning German for X hours a week. What about you guys? How many languages are spoken and how does that work?
Yeah, I think that's one of the fascinating things about here is English is spoken amongst everyone else, I guess. The only way to describe it is, you can work in the city in Doha and survive without Arabic. And I think Qataris will speak Arabic to other Qataris and UAE residents and, you know, people from the Middle East. But when you go to a shopping centre, the majority of staff are either from the Philippines or India or China and they're all speaking English. So, you know, there's really, unless, I think where it would come in handy is if you got in trouble with the police or if you were dealing with the government and you needed certain forms signed. But even really then, you can get around it with English. There'll always be someone that can speak English. And it's a shame because it means that less people are actually attempting Arabic because they can survive without it.
Do your kids learn it at school?
They do, but not well. Do you know that I'm always amazed that my kids have done Arabic all the way through, right, from kindergarten through to grade six, and I think this says more about the school than them. And that is that, I also wonder, is it an expat thing where you have new kids come constantly, so they're always starting from scratch? But, yeah, you know, they can count to 10, they can say their colours, they can put a few words together. They've done a few kids' plays, you know, little tiny one-act plays. But, no, they're not at a level that if they had done, you know, I've had kids that learnt French in other schools and their French was at a certain level, you know, by the time they got to high school. But for some reason learning Arabic here, and I don't know, maybe that signifies what a difficult language it is to learn as well. And, of course, there's zero tolerance when it comes to alcohol in that, yes, you can go and do your Oktoberfest because you're hidden away in the tent, but do not ever try and do something like that out in public because you'll be in all sorts of trouble. Do you know, like you would never see anyone drinking on the street and you would never see anyone drunk on the street.
Yes. Well, and that's arrest and what happens then?
I guess you'd get deported, I imagine. And the one thing I'm really missing to talk about is, and you kind of touched on it when you were talking about South Africa and, you know, guys in cars with ropes, is we have that here too because we have a humongous blue-collar working population of single men, and they live a very different expat life than married white collar workers here, in that they tend to live in a lot of share accommodation. You see them on company buses heading out to work. They work in extreme heat out in the open, and it's a very different expat life for them.
And they're international workers, and they tend to send their money home.
Yes.
To their home countries, and yeah. That's what they're here for. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly why they're here, is they're here on a dream of, you know, paying to support, you know, a family back home. And you really see it, you know, at those Western Credit Union places. What are they called? Are they called Western Union or?
Yeah, I think they're called Western Union, where you wire money.
Yes, yeah. And so on Fridays, you'll just see 100 people lined up at, you know, wiring money home continually. Then I guess it touches on that other expat thing, Nikki, which is the big thing in the expat world.
Oh, yes.
Do you have staff or do you not have staff? And that obviously is making a difference to your expat life as well.
Yes, I totally agree. I mean, I've been in places or two countries where I have had people who have been in the house all the time. One country, Hong Kong, we had live in, and South Africa, we had live out. And then I've been in two countries with no one helping.
And there's obviously good and bad in both of those. So, yeah, because I've done the same. And I did it all backwards for a while there, because it was like the more children I had, the less help I had, until I eventually had four children and no help. And it was like, you idiot, what were you thinking? But, yes, we do have help here in Qatar. We have the most phenomenal person in our lives called Helen, and she's from Ethiopia. And if it wasn't for Helen, I wouldn't have been able to work full-time by any stretch of the imagination. And thank heavens for Helen, in that when I got sick and had breast cancer, she was here to help Greg out as well, you know, when I was having treatment, which just, you know, was incredible for us. And
they're really part of your family. You say, you've got a incredible person in your life. I mean, it's, they become part of your family. I mean, they you care about them and their family, and they care about you and your family. Like, it's a whole kind of different relationship, and it's very hard to explain to people.
It is incredibly hard to explain. And I remember there was an episode of Survivor in America, and there was he was a really obnoxious man from the South, and he used that phrase when he said to, you know, Jeff in one of the tribals, I can't remember, he was talking about that they had help in the house, and the big controversy was that they had an African-American woman working in their home, and he said, oh, she's like one of the family. And Jeff said very snidely to her, oh yeah, how many family members do you pay a weekly wage? And yes, and it was a big, you know, like dum-dum sort of thing. But I think in the expat situation, it is incredibly hard to explain to people, because I'm even struggling to explain it now, in that you can really change someone's life, and you can really make a decision that you're going to really help someone out, and that you'll do anything you can to help them with their education, or to help them build a house, or to help them help their family. Now, as long as you are not an ass of an employer, and you treat people with respect, and you have a proper working relationship with them, and you have a proper contract in place for what the expectations are, I always see it as, this is your chance to really make a difference to someone's world. And, you know, as much as I hope we've been able to help Helen out with her life and what she wants to do next, she has helped us out phenomenally. And also, Helen sits and eats with us every night, and we chat over the dinner table. We now say grace solely because of Helen. We wouldn't have said...
Helen's reformed you.
Helen has reformed us, because Helen goes to church on Fridays, and so we thought, well, we better start saying grace, because it's only polite, because Helen's sitting here and she would probably do that. And so we all say grace for Helen. But the one thing is, because we take it in turns saying grace around the table, and whenever it gets to Helen's turn, I always cry because she says every time, you know, thank you, Lord, for what we're about to eat, and thank you, Lord, for giving me this beautiful family. And it's like, oh, my God, do you know, like she's just so special. When I was sick, there was no one, I would say, that was more concerned about me than Helen. And
I know. Yeah. It's so, I mean, I got teary hearing you say that. And, I mean, I still miss Gina, our helper who lived with us in Hong Kong for 6 years, you know. And, like, she was just amazing, and she was part of our family. I had to take her on a farewell tour of Australia when we left so she could go and say goodbye to all our family members. You know, it's so hard to explain what a special part of your family they become.
Yeah, and you can't without, you know, that there's people that don't understand it and they have a very cynical view of, oh, yes, well, you're just saying that because, you know, they cleaned your toilet or, you know, they did whatever, or they're only being, yeah, and they're only being nice to you because you paid them to be nice to you. Nobody other than your own family will ever understand the connection that you have with someone who is truly living within your house and being part of your family. And, you know, it's a real relationship, and I think sometimes people just don't quite understand that that's what's happened. Anyway, we've got a little bit off track, but let's get back to my expat life. Is not like your expat life. And I wanted you to hear Kate. And Kate, I put a note out on the Four Kids, 20 Suitcases page, and I was asking people about, you know, how did their life look different and what were some of the biggest comparisons that they had where they'd moved from one place to another and it had been an extravagant change. And we heard from Kate, who had moved from Qatar to Vietnam. And I started by asking her, you know, well, what did that look like and how different was her life there?
The life in Qatar for me, I felt it was very easy and comfortable. I worked the whole 2 years we were there, so I had a nice routine. I'm very good with routine. So went to work every day, had a car, nice big roomy air-conditioned car. We lived in West Bay, so we had a really nice, spacious apartment. And I found life in Qatar very comfortable, and we were in a nice routine quickly, so it was nice.
And what sort of work were you doing when you were there?
I was teaching.
Right. And so what happened when you got to Ho Chi Minh City?
It's a chaotic place, Ho Chi Minh City. It's fantastic, but it's kind of the opposite from Qatar. Traffic,
so
motorbikes.
No, I was about to say, so no roomy car that you were driving to work?
Well, some expats do hire cars and drivers. We didn't. It just wasn't necessary for us. But definitely not our own car that we were driving. So you sort of that loss of independence a little bit for me as well. Traffic's really, really bad, and I spent most of my transport to and from school in Vietnam on the back of a motorbike. So I went from big, spacious, roomy car in Qatar to hurtling along on the back of a motorbike. So that was that was different. Enjoyed it, but it was different.
And so then how does that work with grocery shopping? Because I know in Qatar you would have been able to drive to, most supermarkets are in a mall, you'd park outside or underneath, you'd go get the groceries, carry them back to your nice big car and drive home. So how does grocery shopping look like in Ho Chi Minh?
First of all, in Ho Chi Minh City, there wasn't really a one big supermarket. You could get everything. So it was a matter of going around to a lot of smaller shops that had what we needed, so it took a lot longer as well. We would normally catch a taxi to the supermarket where we were getting the biggest load, the most shopping, and then other than that, we would be on the back of our motorbike on the weekend, and you would put, well, it was more of a scooter, so you'd put some under the seat, and I would have a backpack.
And how does your social life look different? Like, what was your social life in Qatar? What was an average weekend?
We don't do much on the weekends. We're pretty quiet on the weekends. But our social life would probably be at a five-star hotel, drinking a really nice glass of wine in a wine bar. And in Ho Chi Minh City, there was that element too, but more likely it was probably outdoors with perhaps a cold beer in an outdoor restaurant.
Yes.
Type situation. So very, very different, which changes what clothes you wear. It changes how you do your hair. It changes whether you bother wearing makeup. I have embraced the permanent sweaty bun and right. very little mascara. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I guess we should say, Kate, because living in Qatar, a lot of people don't realise if you want to have a glass of wine, you have to go to one of those hotels. You can't.
Yes.
You can't mm-hmm. get a glass of wine in a restaurant that's on mm-hmm. the street. They're all alcohol free. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you lose all of that. I'm just going to drop into the local restaurant mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. have a beer or whatever. It has mm-hmm. to be, okay, we have to go to a 5-star, so we've got to get dressed up. And
it's a plan, isn't it? It becomes a plan.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's no mm-hmm. spare of the moment drinks.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was amazed, and I was quite, I'd feel a little bit like it was naughty, or I'd get embarrassed when I first moved to Ho Chi Minh City and could go into 7-Eleven and there was just drink fridges full of beer. And I thought that was really quite naughty after coming from Qatar. It just seemed really strange to be able to grab a couple of beers from 7-Eleven. And if I wanted to open them in the street, I probably could, which was bizarre.
Yes, well, that would be unheard of. And I mm-hmm. guess the other thing that you don't get used to seeing is drunk people. You know, I go mm-hmm. back to Australia and you'll see people and they're obviously inebriated. mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. you just do not see that out on the street in mm-hmm. The Middle East. And what yeah. about clothing? Like, did you find that a massive difference? Like, because obviously in Qatar you would have been conscious about having your shoulders covered mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. whatever. And I guess, what are you wearing in Vietnam?
Anything? I know when I turned up, I had to actually go out and do some shopping because I was still turning up to places in jeans, and all my work tops, my school tops were all long sleeved. So I had to do quite a bit of a wardrobe change.
How does your housing differ from Qatar to Ho Chi Minh?
We always head towards a spacious apartment because we don't really need that much space. There's just two of us. We were able to find a fairly new apartment which was very close to the city for us, which was quite similar to Qatar. But if you were looking for something different, you could actually have villas and big houses with swimming pools and all that sort of stuff in Vietnam, which, again, I didn't have that in Qatar, but I think you can have that. The city, Vietnam, or Ho Chi Minh City, is such a huge city. There were expats sort of spread in lots of different parts of the city, and I think everyone could really find what they were looking for.
But what about language? Because in Qatar, you mm-hmm. can survive without Arabic, because in the shops, mm-hmm. you know, it's mostly English-speaking mm-hmm. Staff, how about in Ho Chi Minh?
It was more difficult, particularly if you're in taxis or, on the back of a taxi motorbike or something like that, because the language barrier was much, much greater. Vietnamese is very hard to learn. I didn't officially learn it, but even trying to say a few words here and there, the tones that you need to make, I just could not do. It was, you know, things like finding hairdressers, or, you know, to any services like that, you kind of had to work hard to find somewhere where you could get what you needed yeah. or be understood to the level that you were looking for. Whereas in Qatar, that's just less of a barrier.
A lot of people hear Qatar in the Middle East and they feel that your life would be constricted, particularly because mm-hmm. you're a woman. So it's fascinating to hear, I guess, is that you've got to factor in that no, there are some things you can do in Qatar that you can't do everywhere else. Mm-hmm. It's quite liberating. Mm-hmm. You know, you can
yeah. mm-hmm.
you mm-hmm. can drive and you can do all of those things and mm-hmm. have more freedom.
Yeah, and it's just really simple things. Like if I was coming home from work in Qatar and I wanted to pop past the supermarket because I wanted to, you know, bake a cake, you can just stop off. Whereas in Vietnam, stopping off means communicating with my taxi driver or my motorbike driver on where to go and that I'll only be a few minutes, and can he wait? And, you know, all those extra things. And with the language barrier, it really was such a difficult task. So it took away some of my independence and things that I couldn't really do just on a whim.
Yes.
Which I find difficult, yeah. Mm.
Okay, wow. Well, that was quite a big difference then. So it sounds like she's in another place now, is that right? So she's
been
to Qatar? Yes.
Yes, so she's in Manila now.
Oh, okay, right. But the Qatar to Vietnam thing was pretty extreme. I mean, the whole thing about the changing of the clothing and the drinking and the riding on the back of the bike.
Yes, I love the motorcycle thing, but
Have you been there?
No, I haven't.
You have to go. You have to go. It's like a river of motorcycles, and to cross the street, you just step out into them, and they all go around you. And you walk, and it's like you put you. There's probably a lot of praying. You just walk into the street, and they all go around you. And then you walk to the other side, and you look back, and you go, "How the hell did I just do that?" It is total crazy.
And I was thinking, like, I know she said that people with kids tend to then go and have cars and things, but I was just thinking about, you know, there were stages in my life where I traveled with, you know, two kids under three, or three kids under four, or four kids under six. I'm trying to imagine that in Vietnam. I gather our life just would have been horrendously expensive, because we wouldn't have been able to do the motorbike thing constantly.
No, and you can't drive, it's my understanding. So whenever I've visited, you have to have a driver. So you have to call the driver. So actually it's kind of cool when you're visiting your friends in Vietnam, because they drop you at a shop and you don't, you know, it's like having a taxi driving you everywhere. And then you just text them, and then they come and pick you up and take you to the next place. But I think, and this could be wrong, and I'm sure somebody will correct me if it is, but I think in the past you weren't able to get a Vietnamese driver's license. So you have to employ a driver.
Wow. Yes. Okay, well, that was definitely life in Jakarta for us as well. People didn't drive, because it was just so manic, and you were in the car for hours and hours and hours, and you employed a driver. All right, so before we move on, I just want to play one other person, and that's Liz. And Liz moved from Beijing to Dhaka in Senegal. And I just want to say the recording isn't half as clear as with Kate, because Africa. And when I was talking to Liz, it dropped out about six times, and then eventually we switched to mobiles, and of course it was really hard to hear her. But there was a certain point in the conversation I wanted to capture, because I thought it was really interesting. But this is her talking about moving from Beijing to Dhaka, but also giving us a picture of what life was like in Beijing, to how quickly, because it really is, 1 minute you're in one place, and in a plane ride you find yourself somewhere completely different. So here's Liz.
Well, we were living in Beijing. We were living in quite... We weren't living downtown. We were living in a suburb near the airport, right? And it was a very expat suburb, because it's where the international schools were, right? But the French school was downtown, which is why my kids had a big commute. But because it was quite an upcoming wealthy suburb, there were loads of wealthy Chinese. And I'm not kidding, just to walk 5 minutes to get to the local shop, I would pass maybe three Porsche Cayennes, you know, the big Porsches there, right? There were so many Porsches. It was just ridiculous, right? And here, this is the first time I've seen, and we've lived in, as I said, three African countries, there are horses and carts everywhere. like these poor, knackered old horses that are letting them drop down dead, you know, hauling bricks and God knows what. But literally on all the, like, on every street, I've seen it in every district, like, you know, the better districts and not the better, you know, there are horses and carts everywhere. And I've never seen that. And we were living in the Ivory Coast, and we were living in Benin and Togo. We've never seen that. So that's the biggest, it's the transport, that's the biggest shock. Going from really posh, you know, Porsches, and I'm not kidding, my next door but one neighbor, we think it was some sort of illegal gambling house, right, in Beijing. There was, parked outside their house, there was an Aston Martin, Bentley, and a Mercedes, right? And then you come here and you have these little minivan things that have got, they're like, they're holding on for dear life because they're all squashed in there and they're like, the back door's open and it's just, yeah, for me the transport is the biggest stark difference, yeah.
And how does that change you, do you think? Do you feel that something changed within you to be living in such vastly different environments?
I honestly don't think so, because Kirsty, this is like our sixth post in 19 years, and I feel like I've seen it all, you know what I mean? I mean, I haven't seen it all, but we're open to, you know, like, we're not narrow-minded, we're very open-minded people, and it doesn't shock me or anything. The people are just so friendly. So you have this guy hanging off the back of a bus, about to die, because, you know, the crazy driver's here, and they're like, oh, saloon, hello, and no, it's not a shock. It's not a shock as much. The shock is here. The problem is, like, they never say no, and you have a problem in the house, and yeah, we'll be there in 5 minutes, and they'll come, you know, the 3 days later, nothing ever gets done, and when they repair things, it breaks the next day, you know? Whereas in China, they were really, like, we had this management at the compound, and literally a light bulb was missing, and you'd ring them, and they would be at your house within 5 minutes, and they would repair whatever, you know what I mean, the air conditioning, the heating, whatever. Whereas here, it's all much more very laid back.
And do you have a preference for where you'd like to be?
To be honest, every posting we've had, so we've been in Ivory Coast, we've been in Benin and Togo, sort of between the two countries, we've been in Israel, China, and now we're in Dakar. Every posting has had its own unique thing to offer. Do you know what I mean? I cried. I didn't want to go to China. I really didn't. I'm like, oh, geez, the pollution, the size of it, you know? And I'm kidding. I cried when I left because I was so happy there. So you never know what to... You know, you have these... You think it's going to be something, and then in fact, it's probably the best posting I've had.
Did you think it was interesting that Liz said how every posting has its uniqueness to offer, and that you might think it's going to be awful, but it ends up being the best posting you've had? Have you ever had that happen?
Yeah. Well, that's what she said, you know, you don't want to go and it's the best posting you get. And that's the thing that stuck out to me too, apart from the horse and carts, which I also found quite interesting.
I loved the horse and carts, because you could just imagine it. And when she said that they were horses that looked like they were just about ready to keel over as well, like it wasn't even a fancy horse and cart. Don't think of a shiny horse and cart.
Yeah, look, I think everywhere is unique, and that's why it's so hard to say what your favourite place is, because everywhere has just something so special about it. That even if you have to choose, you know, you're still not giving... It's just so tough.
Yeah. And you and I have talked about this before, about why it's tough to say what your favourite is. But do you think too, because I have a theory that quite often your favourite is your first place, because that's the place that holds the most nostalgia of where you kind of became this traveller and life changed. And
yeah, you know, it was the first time you couldn't do anything properly as an adult.
Yes. That's a great way of putting it. It is the first time you can't do anything properly as an adult.
You have to relearn the way to do everything.
Do you know, it was something you said to me when we were talking about this episode, and we were saying about favourite places and whatever, and where would you go back to? And I think we both agreed that we wouldn't go back to any of the places that we'd lived in. And it was a phrase that you said, which was, once you go, things change immediately. And that really struck with me. So, I mean, you've only just left Atlanta. Do you feel like even if you went back in 6 months' time, you couldn't slot back in, you would be different again, or it would be different again, or...
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's still really fresh for me. I think I could still go back. I've still got a house. Yeah. Anyone still selling the house? yeah, it's still fresh for me, Atlanta. And I think, you know, it's such an easy life, suburban America. It pretty much is. I'm looking with interest at the next couple of months there, Kirsty, really. The 4th of November is going to be a big day.
Did you watch the debate?
I did set the alarm for 3 o'clock, and then my husband punched me and said, why is there an alarm going off in the night? And then I went back to sleep till just after it finished, and so I watched lots of it when I got up. But I've loved American politics my whole life, and that was one reason that I loved living there. But this is quite the political season, so yeah. It's a whole other thing. And what about you, Kirsty? You couldn't go back anywhere else, or
no? I always say that my favourite was Jakarta, but my life was different then. And you know, you're right. Like once you move on with your life, you're never going to go back to the same thing you had before, because you're different. Your children are a different age, or you feel differently. You've seen different things. And for me, with Jakarta, it was so special for me, I think, because of the friends that I had. It was my first location. It was so exotic and, you know, different. I never, ever got sick of looking out the window at Jakarta. I was speaking to someone recently who just moved from there, and Desiree. Hello, Desiree, because I know she listens to the podcast. But
hello, Desiree.
Yes, and but she was kind of talking about life there, and we were talking about the situation with the teacher at GIS and who was jailed. Did you see all of that, Nikki? Yeah, and I think I don't think there's an expat that isn't up on that story, and just how that changes your way of thinking too, because I guess you're looking at that happening to someone and thinking, wow, do you know, that person is completely innocent and their life has been turned upside down. I think the situation in Indonesia is different now, and the way that Indonesia perhaps feels about expats is different now as well. So it's not the same place. I wouldn't be going back to the same place, and I wouldn't be, unfortunately, a 30-year-old woman with a baby.
What? Just one?
Yeah, but I had such a happy life there, right? But I know that looking at my life right now in Qatar, I've got a very happy life here right now too, do you know? So I think it's exactly what we said, isn't it? As you move along, you find different things with different places, and of course we look back with great nostalgia on all of those places of what we miss, and all the bad things start to kind of fade. You forget about traffic, or you forget about a particular situation at school, or you forget about standing outside in your lederhosen. One of the things when we look about this of, you know, your expat and my expat are so different, because I think the thing is you'll have someone who's in Hong Kong and they'll have help and they'll, you know, live in a very different sort of life, and then you'll have someone who's probably living a very suburban life, and it's maybe not, I don't know, what would you say, that it doesn't look as...
Well, I mean, exotic's not a word, because it's different for you. But I guess the other thing is your exposure to the international community. So other people, in the US, I really was very US focused. So I was almost like just an Aus-American, you know, like just living in America. Whereas here, because I'm speak English and my kids go to an international school. I mean, my kids went to a local school there. Now I'm much more exposed to the international community, and that's just another feeling again. You know, you meet different kinds of people than you meet in your neighborhood when you just live somewhere and your kids all go to the same school. You know, it's just, I mean, another thing to note about Hamburg is it has the third most number of diplomatic consulates outside New York and Hong Kong. So it's super fancy international.
Yeah.
And you know, there are loads of people here from all sorts of different places, and a lot of those kids end up at the international school. So, you know, it's just much more diverse from that point of view.
And I think people hear about that too, Nikki, of embassy dues and embassy dinners, and they think that sounds like a certain sort of expat life, but you're bang on. It is the difference, because, you know, we've had this conversation before about expats and immigrants, and are expats immigrants, and what makes the difference. And no, you're not an immigrant if you are, even if you're an Aus-American and you're there, because you're not ever going to be American. You're not planning on staying there forever. You're not getting residency. You're always going to be an expat.
We're visa dependent.
Yes.
Yeah, we're visa dependent.
Yes.
And whenever, yeah. I think anywhere where you're visa dependent and even though I have my own visa here and I can work, and you're still dependent on a visa and it runs out in a certain period of time. And, you know, you don't want to become, if you don't plan to become a permanent resident in every country you live in, then you've got to be called something. And if no one likes the word expat, then we have to think of a new word, because that's what it is. At the end of the day, you plan to keep moving. And
yes,
that's what it is.
You found a great site for people when we were looking at discussions about expats. You found a great site on Clara Wiggins has a blog called expatpartnerssurvival.com, and she kind of tracks like daily expat life in different countries, and it looked like she'd had a lot of different people show what their daily expat life looked like.
Yeah, so she had people from Zambia and Pretoria. She's living in Pretoria, Saudi, the Netherlands, France, Sweden, and she gets them all to take sort of 10 to 12 photos and submit them with commentary about how their day looks. So it's really interesting, because while they're all living in wildly different places, you know, at the end of the day, people still sort of have to get up, have a routine.
Yes.
Eat. Move their children around. So, you know, it shows the similarities as well as the differences. So I thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah, that is cool. Okay, well, we'll put a link to that up on twofatexpats.com. But we had something very exciting to share that happened on twofatexpats.com this week.
So exciting. Okay, so last week we mentioned that we've got a fancy new button on our twofatexpats.com site where you could leave us a voice message. And this week, Amy, who's living in Medellin, Colombia, left us a message.
And Amy, we both listened to your message with the biggest smiles on our faces, because yay, the technology worked, yay. And God, it was gorgeous to hear from Amy. Like, it was so cool. That was very, very cool.
It was cool. And so Amy said that we can share her message with you.
Hi, Kirsty and Nikki. This is Amy, and I'm in Medellin, Colombia. I listened to the podcast while I was cataloging books today in a library. So shout out to Sarah, who's living her library dreams. And I've been a long time listener, and I really love today's podcast, because we've just been here almost 3 months and still getting settled. So thank you, and look forward to listening next week. Bye.
So, guys, if you want to leave us a message, we would love to hear it, particularly because we are now doing our book club. And the book we're reading, Nikki, is called
Diplomatic Incidents.
And it's a book
by Cherry
Denman. And did you see someone on the Four Kids 20 Suitcases page knew Cherry, and they had lived with her in China?
I did not see that.
Yes.
I must go back and look.
So I'm going to try and track Cherry down and interview Cherry, because
yes. You
and I are both reading the book. I think according to my Kindle, I'm 25% through the book.
Oh, I think I'm 34%. I'm beating you.
Oh, my friend Catherine, who I go swimming with, she's American, and she started reading the book, and she said she's actually struggling with a few of the references, and she wonders if it's a British thing, because Cherry is very stiff upper lip British. She's funny though. She tells a good yarn. She does tell
a
very good yarn.
She's struggling with the references, as in she can't.
She said she just doesn't, she feels like she just maybe doesn't get it.
Right. Okay. So it's the words.
Yeah.
Just use different words.
Yeah. If you are reading Undiplomatic Incidents, and I think it's the memoirs of a very undiplomatic wife, isn't it?
Yes.
Is the tag. But if you are reading it, come across to the twofatexpats.com page and leave us a message and tell us what you think of the book. And then when we do the book club, we can, that's our way that we can all have something to say about the book. So that's what we're hoping, is that instead of Nikki and I just getting on and talking about the book, that we'll be able to have lots of people say what they thought about the book or things that they'd like to discuss about the book.
And you can ask Cherry if you can interview her.
And we'll ask Cherry, yes. So, yes, ask me a question to ask Cherry. That's a great idea. And if you know Cherry and you happen to have his cell number, if you could just drop that in as well. Thanks.
Yeah, that'd be helpful. And what about social media this week, Kirsty?
Okay, my favourite thing on social media this week, and it's actually from a couple of weeks ago, but I wanted to share it, so I've got the link where you can find it on Facebook, is Harge on Snapchat. And I just think this is really interesting, how this is just to me a great sign of how social media is changing things in the Middle East. And, you know, for years I have known friends and people that have gone to Hajj, and they've tried to explain to me what it's like to go to Hajj and just the size and number of people, and that, you know, there's all different types of food and there's all different types of accommodation and there's all different types of people at Hajj, but obviously I've never seen it. Whereas now, someone has put together a whole Snapchat, like everybody's different Snapchat all together.
Yeah.
And I thought it was fantastic to have a look at. So I've put that link on the running sheet.
Okay, and that'll be in the show notes.
Yes. Now, what about you?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that last week my discussion of a recycling article got me some traction on Twitter. Someone, a listener, Melanie, who lives in Copenhagen right now. Hi, Melanie.
Hi, Melanie.
She used to live in Berlin, and she tweeted me and said, yes, it's very difficult. And it did take her several months and a lot of Google translating. So I just want to say I'm not the only one.
Wow. And did Melanie find you on Twitter as Two Fat Expats?
Yes. Yeah. So Two Fat Expats Twitter account, I think I tweeted a link to the, we tweeted a link to the podcast from last week, and she replied and said, yes, about that recycling, very difficult.
And you had a podcast. I don't have a podcast. I have a movie. But what's your podcast?
Okay. So my podcast was, it was so cool. I was trying to get away because we did a lot of Mamma Mia podcasts last week. So I was trying to get out of the country.
Yes.
And I was listening to some of the Gimlet Media podcasts. I
love Gimlet.
And which is Gimlet and the Startup and Alex Bloomberg. And I listened to Alex Bloomberg. I was listening to the latest season of Startup, and I heard Alex Bloomberg interview an Australian girl called Wendy Zuckerman. And she was running, she's had a blog since 2009, and she's like some kind of science journalist person. And she was doing a podcast for the ABC in Australia called Science Versus. And it's, you know, what people think versus the actual science of it. And she does it in a way that's sort of very engaging, as it's very similar to the Gimlet, I guess, the way they do their podcasts. And Alex and his partner were listening to her on one week, and they thought, hey, you know, she's really pretty cool. Maybe she could come and work here. And they set up a Skype call with her, and she thought it was a bit of a joke because it was these big, famous, crazy podcast people. And so she had her housemate's farewell party. So she went to the farewell party and then had a few drinks and then did a Skype call. And it turns out they were quite serious about sort of making her an offer to move to New York, move to New York and be part of the podcast. So, and take her own podcast over there. So then they said, and she said, oh, that's all great. But, you know, and she thought, oh, I might as well push it because they seem to be keen. She said, but I meant to start a new series for the ABC on Monday. So if you want me, you'll have to give me an offer over the weekend. So it's a typical brash, you know, which you expect out of, you know, a plucky Australian. And so they did make her an offer over the weekend, and she got it in time. And she said it to her family to review. So Her family all put their 10 cents in, and then they called to do the follow-up, and then she didn't. She called ABC and said, no, I'm moving to York.
Wow.
So it's just a great story. So once you hear that story, you're so engaged. And then I went to listen to some of her podcasts, and they're excellent. So I really enjoyed it. So it's called Science Versus. So I'll put up the link for the original podcast that she did with Alex Bloomberg, and then the link to her series.
Oh, I would love to hear that. Okay, I had a movie because I don't know about everyone else, but we're in movie hell constantly when we're trying to find a movie for all of our children and us. And e.g., we won't fall asleep because it's so, so mundane, or our teenagers won't tell us that we're watching baby movies, or that our baby isn't going to hear something that they really shouldn't. Anyway, but we did find a movie called Alex and Eve, which is an Aussie movie, and it's probably, and I don't know about anyone else what they do, but I find with my 10-year-old, he probably gets to watch things a little bit older than him because he does. He's the youngest. And so we then have 12, 14, 16, right? So he's, it would probably, if 10 was your eldest child, you wouldn't go there. But if it was your youngest, you'd probably, you're already there. But it's a great movie. It's full of stereotypes, but it's still funny. And it's about two Aussies, one of which is of Alex, who's of Greek Orthodox heritage, and one who's Eve, who's of a Lebanese Muslim heritage, and they fall in love. And it's really about how these families deal with it in modern day Australia and what the repercussions of that are and the relationship. And it's cute. It was just a cute, funny sort of Aussie film. I thought it was great.
Excellent. Sounds like a good one.
Yes. Okay, so we're up to social media. We're going to be talking about it next week for the whole episode.
The whole episode, because social media it's a hot button. So social media and kids is a really hot button. But social media and expat kids, you know, do we let our kids use social media differently because of who they are and who their friends are and where their friends are?
Yes.
I don't know.
Down.
We want to know.
Yeah, I do want to know. And I'd love to hear from people about what their opinion is on this one. I'll put a note out on the Four Kids 22 Cases page, and as well we'll put something on the Two Fat Expats. So we'll talk about that next week. And, yeah, the expat child and social media and what that looks like. And I think this would also tie in for kids in the outback, because I know, Nikki, we have a lot of listeners that are out in the Australian outback and people who just live remotely, because they have a lot of the same issues as expats do.
Absolutely.
With that remote living. So I'd like to hear about that too. I have a great friend, Miss Shardy, who has a blog of her own, and she's a regular listener. And
love Miss Shardy's blog.
Yeah, she's fantastic, isn't she? And yeah, and I know, you know, many of my relatives who are in sort of far north Queensland as well, and they're out on cattle stations. It's a similar, we can have very similar conversations about that same sort of isolation and going without things and kids being away from relatives and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, I'd also be interested to hear from those guys about what their kids do and how they connect, you know, whether they just don't know. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right.
So tell us.
Yes. So that's us for this week again. What have you got on this for the next few days, Miss Moffat?
Well, I'm out to make some more friends. I just want to quickly say hello to my new Facebook friend, Paru, who I had breakfast with this morning. I met her on a Fabulous Expat Women page,
yes.
Facebook page.
Yes.
And, she was heaps of fun. So I look forward to getting to know her better because she seemed like a bit good option.
So do you know who the mutual friend was on the group that made it happen?
Yeah, so really interesting story. She, Paru, has never lived in the same country as the girl on the group whose name is Tammy.
Yes, I know Tammy Needler.
Yeah.
Yes.
Tammy.
Sorry, Tammy Needler. If I've just outed Tammy completely. But yes.
So they met on an app when they were both having a baby at the same time.
No.
And they were living in different countries. and they worked through all the crazies on the app, and then they came down to the people, the rest of the people, and they kind of became friends that way. And then when Tammy was living in the UK, that's where Paru is from, and so she went back, and I'm saying her name wrong, I know, and she went back to the UK to visit and met up with Tammy, and they've been great mates ever since, in real life mates as well as online mates.
That's amazing. So I met Tammy here in Qatar.
There you go.
There you go. Okay. And
it's a small, small expat world.
Is that it for us now? Oh, can I tell you what I'm doing tomorrow? I forgot to tell you what I'm
sorry.
Doing tomorrow.
Yes, you can.
So don't apologise. You don't have to pretend to be interested.
Oh, no, because I want to say something about what you're doing tomorrow.
All right. So I am breaking out of my comfort zone a bit tomorrow. I need to write about this, actually. So one of my aims for coming back this year and not working is getting myself back out there, because when I was working 12-hour days, I was doing a lot of locking myself up in my house and, you know, burrowing away working because I couldn't really get out to do anything else. And so I really had a year between that and the breast cancer and going through chemo. I really had a year of not a lot of coffees, not a lot of lunches, not a lot of, you know, getting myself, pushing myself out there to meet people. So one of our children, their passport is about to expire, and if we don't do something about it very, very soon, they won't get to go home at Christmas.
Shame.
And we don't have an embassy here. Well, we don't have an operational embassy here yet. We will have one very soon, but we don't have one yet. So I am heading to Abu Dhabi tomorrow to go to the embassy to get a new passport for my daughter. But I put a little note out on 4Kids 20 suitcases saying, hey, I'm going to Abu Dhabi. Can anyone suggest anywhere, you know, worth having a look at, because I'll have a few spare hours, and or anywhere to grab a bite to eat. And a few people told me where to eat. And then I think very bravely said, would anyone like to meet me for lunch? And a couple of people said yes. So that's what I'm going to do tomorrow. I'm going to go and make some new friends in Abu Dhabi.
Well, there you go. And can I just tell you the first, because I'm a researcher. Ooh. I don't call it a stalker. I call it researching, not stalking. So I had a look at the first two people that said they'd meet you, and I don't know them, but I have mutual friends with both of them.
Of course you do.
So, and one of them lives in Canada, and one of them is she's Canadian, and one of them is an Australian living in Atlanta.
Oh, that is bizarre.
The mutual friends. So
that's
anyway, I feel that you're going to be safe. That's what I was just looking out for your safety.
All right. Okay, well, that's us. Oh, God, the expat world is a small, small world, isn't it? People just... Or particularly expat women. I bet you the same thing does not happen with expat men. I bet you, and I hope I'm not being sexist when I say that, but I have a feeling that expat men don't say, oh, we have four mutual friends, because...
I'm pretty sure they're not doing the extra click.
Okay, Nikki Moffat, I'm going to say goodbye, and...
Okay, don't forget to take a photo.
Oh, yes, and I'll take a photo outside and send it to you straight away.
Okay.
All right. Bye now.
Bye. Bye.